So we heard yesterday that the Leaving Cert results date will be the 2nd of September this year. The first time, I believe, the results have been released in the month of September. And the Irish University Association has said they want the Leaving Cert exams to be held in May in 2023. The Director General joins me now. That is Jim Miley. Hello, Jim.
Hi, Ciara.
So, Jim, just let our listeners know why you'd want the exams to be held in May, and also what effect would that have on the school year for other students and for the Leaving Cert students who may be winding down, I guess, towards the end of May, having a couple of weeks of a break and maybe being able to get a bit more attention from their teachers at that time when they're not as focused on other students towards the end of the year, if that makes sense.
Well, this is very much with the student in mind. We have a situation where we now have students coming out with Leaving Cert results, having almost no time to make choices or plans with their families to go to, you know, a new city, a new town, a new part of the country to study in what is one of the biggest life-changing events of their young lives. Now, this year, obviously, the process has been delayed for particular reasons, and that's entirely understandable. But even in a normal year, Leaving Cert results come out in the middle of August. A few days later, the CSO offers for college come the first round, but the second and third round offers don't come in many cases until early September. So you have an impossibly short time frame for students to make arrangements, and that's, you know, it's not just about getting the college course. It is also about, obviously, getting accommodation, which is in dreadfully short supply and will remain so for the coming years. So we're saying, could all of the sector sit down together, have a conversation about how to do this better, and try to work to remove the stress point for students in some way?
The pandemic has been, I guess, a great moment in terms of restructuring lots of things in Irish society, including the examinations. Obviously, it's horrific that it ever happened, but when the positives are there and it's happened, we try and take them. And we know there are lots of changes that lots of different associations and students want to see when it comes to the Leaving Cert. You know, you're mentioning the housing crisis there. It's obviously going to impact students. It has for the last number of years, the prices, etc. So will the month of May make that much of a difference to an area, would say, like that?
Well, I think it will for a number of reasons. So, firstly, why do we want this? The third level system has moved significantly in the last few decades to bring it into line with international norms. So, right across Europe and in most parts of the world, the whole third level system is now semesterized. What that means is that there's two and three distinct blocks in the year where the courses are run with exams and assessments on a continuous basis or at the end of those blocks. So we're very much brought into line with that. However, we're not in line with European or UK colleges in terms of when offers for college are made. So if you're an Irish student and you apply to a UK college, in some cases you get a conditional offer in May or June. And then you get a confirmed offer, in many cases, by July and August. I've had parents of students on the phone to me saying, you know, I have a daughter, and this is a very specific example, who has got a place in a veterinary college in Warsaw, but I must make the decision before the end of August. But I'd really, and my daughter would prefer to go and do veterinary in Dublin. But they're forced into making those kind of choices because our timelines are out of line with the rest of Europe. And that's just one example. The other challenge is that, you know, about 3 out of 5 Leaving Cert students now go on to third level. But then another close to 1 out of 5 go on to further education, doing, you know, level 5 or level 6 courses. And in some cases, those students do those courses after the college entry process has completed. So last year, for example, I know of a number of further education colleges where the programs didn't start until the middle of October. Why? Because they couldn't fill the places until all the college places were filled. So there's a whole ripple effect to the system. And what we're really saying is, you know, this has been in place for over half a century. It's now time to sit down and tidy it up. There is a move to change the Leaving Cert, the National Curriculum and Assessment Board has reported, and there are proposals that we will move towards a less absolute dependence on the final exam in the Leaving Cert and more continuous assessment. Now, there still will be a final exam, but we're also saying that could we look at bringing forward that final exam, you know, perhaps on a staged basis, not initially by a week and then by another week, because really this is about reducing the unnecessary stress for tens of thousands of students every year.
Now, you have mentioned that the colleges and universities will do their best to support all new students who are due to start in September. What does that mean?
Well, it means that a number of colleges have already, since the results were announced yesterday, have taken decisions on the dates on which they'll take in. So we have some colleges who are starting back on the 5th of September, others on the 12th, and one or two others a bit later. What they're saying is that they'll be taking in first years in some cases 2 weeks after the college is open. They are committing to giving them an orientation. Now, that's extremely difficult because in the normal situation, they bring in first years before everyone else comes back to familiarise them with the place, to get them set up on the various, you know, digital systems and all the kind of learning aids that there are these days for students. What they're saying is they will continue to do that, but obviously they're doing it at a time when the college is now operating at full tilt with other students back. The second thing that they're doing, and not all of colleges have on-campus accommodation, but seven of our universities do, and they will all reserve some proportion of those for first years to take a little bit of pressure off. Now, you know, when we say that, we say it in recognition that the university only owned accommodation only accounts for just over 10% of the
total accommodation. Yes, so we'd say what of that 10% would be left aside for the first years?
Not the whole 10%.
Of that 10% would be left aside?
That varies. I mean, UCD have announced yesterday that they're reserving 1,000 places in UCD for first years, for example. So it's a significant number of places. But the reality is that the bulk of the student accommodation is privately owned. Obviously, that'll operate on a first-come, first-served basis. And if first years are coming in later, then they're further down the queue, which is very difficult for someone who's starting out on this journey. I mean, I remember myself when I first came to college in Dublin. And, you know, students don't know their way around. But doing so, you know, against the odds is even more challenging. So I think we really need to work together to try and make this better. And at the moment, I think we're dealing with a legacy system that has outgrown its usefulness, and we really need to revisit it.
It's going to be an incredibly quick turnaround for so many people, because the Leaving Cert results will come out on the Friday, the 2nd of September. And as you noted, some of the universities will resume teaching from the 5th of September. So literally a weekend. Lots of people will turn off their phone on the weekend if they are a private landlord, or, you know, if they're dealing with the college accommodation places. So it probably means that for some people, Jim, they won't have a place, I guess, to lay their head in terms of college accommodation wide for the first week or so.
Well, that's been the situation for the last number of years. I mean, we obviously have a housing crisis, an overall accommodation crisis. We have a particular crisis every autumn over the last number of years. And this year, with the pressures, further pressures on housing because of the housing, rightfully, I would say, the Ukraine refugees, we're going to have even greater pressure. But like colleges are doing everything they can, you know, they're working at a local level, I know, in some situations to try to encourage more people who traditionally would have offered digs for students. And these perhaps are, you know, more elderly householders or whatever. Some of those have been reluctant to do that because of the COVID situation. They've stepped away from it. So
that's a very good point. I'm sure there's a percentage, obviously, that have left that potential rental market. Yeah,
there are. So there's lots of dimensions to this issue. But like our colleges have very strong connections. All the colleges have, you know, lists of private accommodation suppliers that they try and help students with. But there is a basic demand and supply problem. And
so, Jim, if anybody's listening to you, they themselves are planning on going into first year of third level, or they're a parent or a grandparent of somebody, how can they get in touch with the association if they're looking for help?
Well, the best thing to do is get in touch with the relevant colleges that they're interested in going to. I mean, that's the... Because they're the people that will sort it out on the ground. Look, I suppose in a lot of cases, students have a good idea that they, or they may have fixed their idea on going to a particular college and may have chosen alternative courses within that college. In that scenario, they can go, I suppose, earlier and organize their accommodation, hopefully, and then, you know, find out which course they get into. The real challenge is for students who, you know, might have applied to Cork and Dublin and Limerick and don't know which one they'll end up in. I think that's the real challenge. Look, the advice is to, I suppose, take the best choice they can for their course. You know, they shouldn't... I think nobody would be advising them to take a course just because they can find accommodation in a particular place. But obviously they need to follow their dream in terms of their career choice. And look, the colleges will do everything they can to help them to sort themselves out when they make that choice.
Okay, a date has not yet been released for when the first round of the CAO college offers will go to students, but we know the Leaving Cert result date since yesterday is the 2nd of September. That's a Friday, and as Jim pointed out, many universities do resume teaching from the 5th of September, so it's clear that first year admissions will be delayed. And as he noted, if you have any trouble getting contact with your college or university that you plan on going to, and hopefully you can get something sorted out. Thank you so much to the Director General of the Irish Universities Association. That is Jim Miley. The Michael Mullen Charity Fund is seeking entries for its annual short story, flash fiction, poetry and Kildare micro fiction competitions. Writers, whether they're established or not, are invited to submit on any theme. And I am joined now to discuss this by Pat Mullen, father of Michael and co-founder of the Michael Mullen Charity Fund. Good afternoon, Pat.
Good afternoon, Ciara. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we really appreciate you joining us. I want to begin, I guess, by speaking about Michael and why this charity fund came to be.
Yeah, a lot of local people will be familiar with Michael's story. He had three bouts with cancer in his relatively short life of 28 years. When he was 16 months, he developed neuroblastoma, which is generally a child cancer in the abdomen area. And at that time, the success rate for treatment was quite low. It was 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 that survived it to adulthood. So he spent quite a bit of time in Crumlin Hospital back then, and that was in 1993. And he had all sorts of treatment there, including surgery, bone marrow transplant and chemo over a relatively short period of about 6 months, very intensive treatment. He came through that and was fine, regular checkups and so on, but was well able to lead a normal life without any after effects from the illness. Then when he was 7, he developed type 1 diabetes, which required insulin treatment, you know, administering insulin on a daily basis. And that interfered with sports life, really, because the blood sugars would drop when he'd be playing sport and all that. And then in his final year of college, he was doing law and business in Trinity. We got the shock of our lives, really, to find that the cancer had come back and that... his kidney was involved. It was renal cell cancer this time, but somehow related to the neuroblastoma. He had surgery then. They took out half of one kidney, and they said that they'd got everything, and we were quite happy. You know, at the time, he was in his final year of Trinity, so he got the exams deferred because of the surgery, and he was out of college for about 2 or 3 months at the time. And they permitted him to do his exams in September. So he did very well in the exams, got a first in business and law, And from that, he secured a scholarship to Harvard to do a master's in law.
So amazing. So amazing. So he moved to Boston.
He moved to Boston, and he was only there 3 months, and the cancer came back again. Slightly different format this time, renal cell cancer, but a very rare version of it, translocational, they call it, and don't ask me the differences. So he was given 6 months to live, and he went to Dana-Farber, spoke to the people there, and they said, look, we'd throw everything we can at this. We're not promising anything. But they gave him an additional 5 years rather than 6 months. So he spent... He went back to Harvard then after getting the thing stabilised somehow or another on immunotherapy. Went back to Harvard, managed to graduate from there, and then applied to American College in Washington to do a PhD in law. Again, he got a scholarship there, and it was amazing that, despite how unwell he was, it was amazing how the docs over there were able to keep his head right and enable him to live a relatively normal life despite very intense treatments of all sorts. And he was able to study, he was able to write papers. He got published in a series of law journals, both in the States and here at home. But it just, the toll, I mean, the whole regime took its toll, and at the end of November 2020, he passed away at the age of 28. And at the time, there was fantastic work being done in order to keep Michael in the States, to keep him over there and ensure that he could get the best available treatment. A lot of local support from football clubs, rugby clubs, local neighbours and friends, relations, people from across the globe, really, got fantastic support. And there was all sorts of fundraising events ran at that time, and one of them was the writing competition that we got involved in. That was 5 years ago. This will be the fifth year of the competition. That was 5 years ago, and with the support of Kildare Library and Arts Service, who have been very, very supportive of us in this over the years, we got a lot of requests from people, would we not continue running it after Michael passed away? It had become almost embedded in the creative writers' calendars around Kildare particularly, but elsewhere as well. And so we thought...
Pat, before we get into a bit more detail about the writing competition, you as a parent, you went through an awful lot having to witness your child, fight cancer 3 times. How were you able to cope?
I don't know. I don't know that I did. I don't know. I mean, Michael was a very positive person, and Mel, his wife, they're an unbelievable couple. And they lived life to the full. I mean, if they were well, they were doing something. They were, out and about. They were very, very positive. So, I mean, that helps an awful lot. And Dan's the type of person that he was. He did a lot for the underprivileged, and, that was his main concern. He did voluntary work with prisoners and stuff like that. So, great consolation in that.
Well, his life story, 28 years, but it's incredible what he did, getting a scholarship to Harvard. Then you said going on to the American University, was it, to do the PhD in law?
Yeah.
It's just absolutely amazing. And so much support from the community. I know you're a local of Eadstown, and obviously that was the club Michael did play for.
Yeah.
And that's something I know your family have been so grateful for, the local community in particular, and how much they got behind you.
Oh, absolutely. They were fantastic and, really, really good neighbours.
Well, Michael, I want to hear a bit more about this competition. So you are seeking, of course, anybody, no matter what your experience is, if you're a writer, established or not, they're invited to submit on any theme. And within the competition, there's, I guess, 4 different sections. There's the short story, the flash fiction, poetry, and then the micro fiction. Let us know about each one of those, please.
Yeah, short story is up to 2,000 words. There's an entry fee of €15. and there's prize money of €200 for the first prize and €100 for the second. So it can be about anything, you know, 2,000 words. Then the poetry, again, any theme, any about anything, up to 40 lines. The entry fee there is a tenner, and the prize money is €100. I'll just check that.
You're all right. No, the first prize is
€150 for the second prize, yeah. And then the flash fiction, which is a shorter short story, let's say, up to 500 words. And again, entry fee is a tenner, first prize 100, second prize 50. And then last year we introduced this local microfiction competition that's open to people who live or work or were born in County Kildare. And that's a really short story, up to 300 words. And in this case, the entry fee is a tenner. And Pauline Clooney, now from the Kildare Writers' Centre, has very kindly sponsored the prizes in this. And she's offered 2 4-week writing courses with her writing centre for the winner, and a 1 4-week writing course for the runner-up. And we're very grateful to Pauline for helping us out on this.
And the closing date for all of those is the 14th of July this year. And
14th of July.
Yeah, and all entries can be made by email only to MMCF, so that stands for the Michael Mullen Cancer Fund.
Sure. Charity Fund, yeah.
Charity Fund, sorry. MMCF Writing Competition at gmail.com. So you pay the entry fee online, you email the story, the short story, the flash fiction, the poetry or the micro fiction to that email address. And as I said, midnight on the 14th of July is when the competition does close. Thank you very much for joining me this afternoon. That is Pat Mullen. He is co-founder of the Michael Mullen Charity Fund and of course dad to Michael, who was an incredible person. You heard about his 28 years, what he did and what he went through. Very inspirational. Thank you so much, Pat, for joining me this afternoon. I greatly, greatly appreciate it. Owen Beattie joins me now. We have seen today, just a little earlier on this afternoon, that Kildare County Council published their annual report for 2021. Lots of details on this. I know on Monday morning at approximately 9.25, Kildare Today, is going to be speaking with the interim chief executive on this. But Owen, to begin, we're going to go through councillor expenses. Now, the members' annual allowance is €22,201.82. There's 40 councillors in Kildare County Council, and we're going to do the top 10 in terms of the highest annual expenses.
Indeed, yeah, and we'll go through the lowest five as well after this. Ciara, as you say, Sonia Kavanagh, the interim CEO of Kildare County Council, will be on the Kildare Today programme on Monday at 9.25. But in terms of the annual expenses paid to councillors, top there was Vera Louise Behan, €8,530. Fianna Fáil councillor in Athy. Second, also in the Athy MD, Labour councillor Mark Lee. Annual expenses there, €7,949. In third also in the Athy MD, Fianna Fáil councillor Brian Dooley, €7,432. Then it was Aoife Breslin in the Athy MD, €7,340. Fifth in the Selbridge Leixlip MD, Fianna Fáil councillor Bernard Caldwell, €7,065. Joe Neville in the Selbridge Leixlip Municipal District as well, €6,991. He's a Fine Gael councillor. He was in sixth, while seventh highest, Michael Coleman, €6,875. Fianna Fáil councillor in Selbridge Leixlip. In eighth, Kevin Duffy, Fine Gael councillor in Kildare Newbridge, €6,791. Then in ninth, Suzanne Doyle, Fianna Fáil councillor in Kildare Newbridge, €6,350, while Tim Durkin in the Clane Maynooth Municipal District makes up the top 10 in 10th place with €6,333.
Yeah, and if we look at the lowest in terms of the annual expenses, both Social Democrat councillors Chris Pender for Kildare and Newbridge and then Aidan Farrelly for Clane Maynooth are on the same amount, the lowest, €3,027.25. Then they're tied for first, as I said, so technically one and two there. If we look at three, it's Green Party councillor Vanessa Liston on €3,851. In fourth, it is Noel Connolly of Sinn Féin and Kildare and Newbridge, €3,942. And I believe in fifth, Owen, I don't have fifth in front of me here.
Yeah, it's Evie Salmon, the Fine Gael councillor on the Naas Municipal District, €4,211.12. That's the lowest.
Perfect. So
that is the five lowest.
The top, yes. So the lowest was Chris and Aidan Farrelly. Evie is the fifth lowest. Owen, if you look at the local property tax in terms of the MDs there.
Yeah, now each year councillors in the five municipal districts can allocate retained local property tax funds for specific purposes within their district. This funding has benefited many groups and schemes throughout the county in 2021, according to the report, including in the Athy Municipal District, the playground at the Fair Green in Castle Dermot opened to the public in June 2021. It's a new amenity containing 20 different types of play equipment. Meanwhile, the Sing and Sign group, who run sign language courses in Athy, used local property tax funding to allow the team to continue to deliver sign language services throughout the community. In Selbridge Leixlip, a new wheelchair swing was installed at the Agards Road playground in Selbridge, featuring a wheelchair platform and swing frame that allows young wheelchair users to experience the excitement and physical benefits of accessible play. The Tea Lane building is a vibrant community space which hosts drama groups and other performances and exhibitions. They used LPT funding. In the Kildare and Newbridge Municipal District, LPT from that MD was allocated to the maintenance and upgrade of Christmas lights and fittings in a number of towns and villages, including Rathangan. Local property tax was also used by Kildare Town Community First Responders to purchase replacement defibrillator pads for each of the group's public access defibrillators. If we go to Naas, local property tax funds supported the launch of a new community bus initiative by Naas Community Gardaí in conjunction with the Naas MD. And in the Clane Maynooth Municipal District, Heads Up, a suicide prevention project for men, also used that money.
Yeah, if we look at some of the highlights and the examples of the work carried out in each MD in terms of the LPT, a number of projects were completed in Athy MD, local improvement schemes in places such as Calverstown and Killeen East, the community involvement schemes like Ball Alley Lane in Kildoon, Carrageen Lane, we also have Ross Brand Lane, just to name a few. Then if you look at Kildare and Newbridge, in Milltown, the footpath works, the Brownstown drainage and also footpath works, then the Gables in Newbridge, the new entrance to the linear park. That's just some of the LPT money spent on the Kildare Newbridge MD. If you look at Naas, the local property tax and the car park funded works Swans to Patrician Avenue, Monreed Avenue, then footpath works in Roseville, Lakelands, Lacken View, Broadfield View and Clane Maynooth, the footpath works in Loch Bollard in Clane, the climate adaption and resilient works at Mill Pond in Staplestown, and in Selbridge Leixlip, footpath repair works to older estates across the MD, it notes here, and crews did carry out routine maintenance to water in terms of the drainage works. Owen, if you move now to the community grants.
Yeah, indeed. And we'll also take a look at housing services shortly. But community grants that were awarded in 2021, there were 134 community grants. The amount there, €236,000. Festival grants, 56 of those were allocated at a cost of €44,000. Local property tax, 380, €703,000. Private Estates Residents Association, there were 300 grants awarded there, €111,000. Local Authority Residents Association, 71 grants, €44,000. The Druid Landfill grants, 28 of those, €201,000. Community Enhancement Programme, 27, €148,000. COVID Round 2 funding, 32 grants awarded, €57,000. Social Enterprise and Funding, there were 6 of those grants at a cost of €40,000. And Education Bursaries, 35 of those, 20. €24,000.
Again, a lot more detail in terms of the housing service will be given by the Interim Chief Executive of Kildare County Council, that's Sonia Kavanagh, on Monday morning at about 9:25. But one area I want to highlight, families in private emergency accommodation. That includes supported temporary accommodation and family hubs. This is as of the 31st of December 2021. So the number of households with dependents that were in homeless or emergency accommodation between 0 to 6 months was 17. That was 25 adults and 32 dependents. 6 to 12 months, 9 households there, 11 adults, 13 dependents. 12 to 18 months, 6 adults, 5 dependents. 18 to 24 months in emergency accommodation, 5 adults, 5 dependents. 24 to 30 months in terms of the accommodation, the adults, 4 and the dependents, 3. And over 30 months, there was 8 adults in emergency accommodation and dependents, 8 again over 30 months. Owen, if we look at the business support funding, obviously COVID affecting that majorly.
Yeah, and a lot of businesses around the county would have availed of a lot of these grants. The web development grant, there were 119 businesses availed of that at an amount received of €221,000. Shopfront grant, 78 of those given out, €144,000. Outdoor seating and accessories grant, no surprise that this was the most number of businesses put their names forward for this, because we've seen a lot more outdoor dining and, you know, restaurants and bars sitting outside. 126 businesses, €387,000 was the amount received between those. Export marketing grants, 18 of those at a cost of €28,000. A startup or expansion or export marketing grants, 54 of those at a cost of €1 million, I believe there is the cost. While Agile Innovation Fund, 3 of those grants given out to businesses, €214,000.
I'm just going to finish up on this. I know you have one more thing to go through there, Owen, in terms of burial grounds, but I'm going to finish on the local area plans. If we look at NAIS, it was adopted the 2021 to 2027 at a special meeting of Kildare County Council. That was on the 21st of October. It came into effect on the 1st of December last year. Then the Athy local area plan was adopted by the MD in July 2021, and it did come into effect on the 13th of September the same year. Then Maynooth, the background work for the local area plan is currently underway. Various environmental and infrastructural assessments are being prepared to inform that draft. And finally, Kildare Town, again, the background work for that local area plan is underway. Finally, Owen, we're just going to briefly touch on burial grounds, something that we receive a huge amount of correspondence from listeners on, don't we?
Yeah, indeed. Just before that, one thing that really strikes me is the fire calls by station in 2021. So just the amount of call outs that were received by the fire stations around the county, 450 in Naas, 200 in Athy, 250 in Maynooth, 150 in Monastrevin, and 155 in Leixlip. So interesting there. In terms of the burial grounds, the council manages over 30 active cemeteries around the county. Grant support for the upkeep of cemeteries is provided to local committees. Works are continuing at several locations to improve facilities at the cemeteries, and some of those works include in Athy road and path improvement works, in Ballymore Eustace paving improvement works at the cemetery there, in Churchtown, public lighting, Kildare, St Conlett's Cemetery, works on resurfacing, bunker improvement, boundary improvement and signage improvement, Kilcock, Boystown, tree pruning, surface water improvements, and in Lara Bryan, in Maynooth, pathway resurfacing.
Okay, well, thank you very much to Owen Beattie for that. As I said, Kildare County Council did publish their annual report for 2021 a little earlier today. You can get more details. The full report, 260 pages, is on kildarecoco.ie, the website there. You can find out everything you need to know. And on Monday morning, 9:25, the Chief Executive of Kildare County Council, that is the Interim Chief Executive, Sonia Kavanagh, will join Clem from about 9:25. Tonight, the 16th year of celebrating diversity in Athy will be celebrated, and the 15th anniversary of Women's Integrated Network's public launch will also be celebrated. It's taking place in the Arch. There's provision for online participants to join also. It's at 7 to 10 this evening, and I am joined now by Frances Sonny Itiwan. She is the founder and executive coordinator with Win Athy. Hello to you, Frances.
Hello, Kira. How are you keeping?
I am good. Thank you very much. I'm sure you're very excited for what's happening in just a few hours. You have lots of things happening at the event. Let us know some of the special guests that will be appearing.
Okay. This year we're doing differently because we were talking with the young people and the teenagers. And they said, we want to tell our story. We want to tell about the entrepreneur ideas that have come to us, you know, in the course of the COVID lockdown. I said, okay, we'll facilitate that. So we'll be having the young people speak to us today. They are special guest speakers. So I'm excited to know what they want to tell us. Then we will have the 360 Triple T. It is a new phenomenon for young people and teenagers. So, and adults too, I'm told, are excited, you know, to try get on it. So we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, participants are working together to debut a new dance move. So I'm assuming some of the adults will need work on that, Francis.
Yes.
I feel like you probably... Are you a good dancer yourself?
I try.
Oh, okay. You like a move. I like it. Just how important is Win a Thigh to the community, Francis?
I must say to you, it's been amazing, really, because prior to 16 years back, it was a struggle trying to get people, you know, to work together, to talk, you know, because I must tell you, our people are wonderful. But prior to that time, they didn't know what way to relate to the new members of the community. They weren't sure what way to go so as not to offend. And when we carried out the needs analysis and we found out what the issues were, we said, okay, we're creating the platform, and that's where how we came. And it's amazing because we've had people across board from every walk of life, you know, as members of WIN. And the goodness of the successes that we've had is that we allow people to come when and how they are, and we make an effort to work with them to improve where they met us, you know, before they move on to the next stage in life. So it's been amazing, and has been at the forefront of promoting positive integration. So it's, and then, you know, this year our 2022 theme.
Yes, your 2022 theme. Yeah.
It tries to encapsulate everything that we have been pushing for. Because I'm saying, if you have community-based social entrepreneurs and you support them, then you're making provision for economic empowerment and economic growth. And one of the key principles of positive integration is that people are economically empowered to be able to fend for themselves and look after the, you know, the general well-being, you know, through their taxes, through their support, and through their volunteering of their time. Because they know that they can look after themselves and look after their family, they are more inclined to reach out to the next person, you know, and it promotes social inclusion. So we're looking at it, you know, that if we can get the support, you know, so by choosing the theme this year, we said we will concentrate on looking for support that will promote community-based entrepreneurships, you know, and we said we'll do that for economic empowerment, for social inclusion, civic and political participation, moral and spiritual well-being for positive integration. And it's in line with this that when the young people approached us and said, we want to tell our story, we want you to know that, yes, COVID, yes, was tough, but, you know, some good came from it.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm really, really itching and looking forward to what they're going to tell us later this evening.
Yeah, so from 7 to 10 tonight, or this evening in the Arch. It's the Friday, it's the 24th of June. That is today, believe it or not, 16th year of celebrating diversity in Athy and the 15th anniversary of WIN's public launch. So much happening. You went through the theme. What else? You know, like fun games, mimes, musicals, statues, free raffle draws. Everybody loves free stuff. And this is a free family event also, Francis. And just celebrating the positivity, I guess, that did come from COVID in many aspects. Thank you so much for joining me. Have a great time this evening. That is Francis Sunny Itouan, founder and executive coordinator of Win a Thigh.